Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Good morning all and welcome to Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. This is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air live in the studio. My name is Dan, I'm an alcoholic and your chairperson for today's meeting. You can all say hi Dan if you want.
Hi Dan.
Hi everyone. All right, let's open the meeting as we often do with the Serenity Prayer. And I'll invite you all to join me. God
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Fantastic. All right, I'll just read the AA preamble now. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. In the studio today, we have Spiritual Concepts, which is a meeting on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. It's still in Roseneath, guys, eh?
Yeah.
So it's a meeting which is has a spiritual theme, and it normally starts with a reading, and so we'll start that way as well. Chris, would you like to read for us?
Yep. Hi, I'm Chris, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
And this is from page 567 from the Big Book. Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading show that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among a rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often friends of the newcomer are aware of the differences long before he is himself. He finally realises that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could have hardly been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unexpected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience, and more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the programme. Willingness, honesty and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. And there's a quote from Herbert Spencer here. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
Thanks, Chris. All right, now we'll go through the members in the studio and they can share on their alcoholism or the reading. So we'll start with Jeremy.
Thanks, Dan. My name's Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jeremy.
And 23 years ago today, I had my last drink.
Wow, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And that night was, I had done many worse things in my time, more embarrassing things, some of which, well, actually none of which I can really repeat on air. And I was driving home drunk, which was with a mate, which was pretty common, and it was 6 a.m, and in those days it was a bit easier to get away with driving home drunk. And he knew what I'd been up to, and I rang my then wife and made the usual bullshit excuse, and he said, "I can't believe you got away with that. That is the lamest thing I've ever heard. You're an effing legend." And normally when someone calls you a legend, you know, you think, that's pretty cool. I'm that sort of ego inflating. You think you're pretty good about yourself. This time for me, it was like, that's not what happened at all. Soon as the word legend dropped, the reality of who I was as a man rolled out in front of me like the credits from Star Wars. And there was no emotion to it. There was no feeling at all. It was just, a statement of fact. And there was a man who was manipulative, innocuous, insipid, nasty, just pathetic. And it was somebody I really didn't want to be. And I knew it was a man I did not want to be to my core. And I was given a stark choice, and that choice was, I can carry on doing what I'm doing and be that guy, or I can change. And in that moment, I chose to change. So I dropped my mate off, and I then rang my wife, told her the truth, immediately had nowhere to live, and so I went to my parents, and they said, you can't stay here unless you do something about your drinking. Now, I was convinced that there was nothing wrong with my drinking, because I've heard a lot of alcoholics say that they seem to miss out on the rule book in life, that they were disconnected in some way, that everyone else seemed to know how to do things, what was going on, and they don't. Well, that was very much my experience. I was utterly convinced that I was a fraud, and that when you all found out, it was going to end badly. I didn't know how the badly was going to be, what the badly was, but it was just going to be bad. And I spent my entire life in fear of being found out, of just how fraudulent a human being I was. And when I drank, there was a period of time when that went away. The trouble was, it didn't stay that way. I would crash through being sort of moderately civilized into somebody horrible, opportunistic, hedonistic, manipulative, any opportunity to get what I thought I wanted in that given moment. And understandably, that is not a particularly good way to have human relations. And I was convinced that there was something seriously wrong with me, not with drinking. Drinking was the thing that made it all okay, that gave me relief, and I would be, I'd be gagging for drinking on by the weekend. I just wanted to get stuck in on a Friday because of the way it made me feel. And that's something the book does talk about. And I managed to drink myself into hospital a couple of times. The doc said to me on the last time, if you do that again, you're not walking out of here. And that didn't slow me down for a nanosecond. Adopting my son didn't slow me down. My ex-wife certainly didn't. Family didn't. People asking me not to drink, not a chance. Nothing would, because I just didn't believe that was the problem. I thought it was deep-seated. I had this deep-seated belief that it was me. I was the problem. And as I turned out, I was right, but not for the reasons that I thought. And anyway, so when my parents said, you've got to do something about your drinking, I was said, look, no, there's something really wrong with me. I need psychologists and psychiatrists and all that. And they said, no, you just need to do something about your drinking. And my dad was in the Navy. He'd seen lots of sailors, so I guess he had some expertise in the consequences. And he held the line. I threw a tantrum. He still held the line. So I rang AA without a clue as to what that meant, and I just knew it had something to do with not drinking, and I knew that would get me a roof over my head. So I went to my first AA meeting. It was on a Friday night. I know it was on a Friday night because it was a dry dock meeting, which is here on a Friday night. And I walked into the room, and there was God on the wall, and there was, I thought, Jesus, I walked into a bunch of happy clappers, and particularly with dry dock because, it's the Lord's Prayer and all that sort of thing. And I didn't really care because I turned up to get a roof over my head. I didn't turn up with any intention to stop drinking. And the guy I'd spoken to on the phone, on the 0800 number, I think he was quite surprised I showed up, because let's be realistic, it's not always that common that they do. And I had been half cut when I spoke to him. But anyway, halfway through that, they sat me in the front of the meeting, so I couldn't get out. And halfway through that meeting, I realized, I'm an alcoholic. shit, that's the problem. That's been the problem all along. And it wasn't like a little voice goes off and says, you're an alcoholic. It was, I went from one state of knowledge to another state of knowledge. And that's been my experience of a spiritual experience. I go from point A to point B with absolute certainty. And when that realization landed, the desire to drink left, which considering how many people had tried to, I didn't realize that my ex-wife had actually gone around my friends saying, hey, please don't let him drink. You know, that I found that out after I got sober. And I threw myself into AA for a good, 6 months. Well, probably 3 months, and then it started to taper off. I did about 100 and something meetings in 90 days because, that's how I got told to do that. And I started the steps, and then I thought, well, I got my life back. My ex-wife forgave me. Most people forgave me because they thought that when the booze was put down, the problem would go away. And obviously, when I wasn't drinking, suddenly a lot of my financial problems started to improve because I was spending a poultice on booze and everything that went with it. And my health got better. I had a shitload more time because when I'm drinking, I'm not exactly functional, and I'm either, when I'm on the other side of drinking, I'm recovering from it, and I'm still not functional. So a whole lot of things got better, and I thought it was enough not to drink because, that seems to be the problem. Alcoholism, don't drink, problem goes away. And if I wasn't an alcoholic, that would almost certainly be true. But because I'm an alcoholic, when I stopped going to AA meetings, I stopped treating my alcoholism, and I wasn't drinking. I was a dry drunk. And as a dry drunk, I annihilated every relationship I had. My ex-wife had enough of me this time permanently. And most relationships basically said, we don't want to know you. And I ended up back in AA because fortunately they pretty much have to take you back. And I haven't left. And that's been one of the big secrets of staying sober. I haven't left. I finished off the steps, and for a long time, it's only relatively recently that I understood how sick I was. And the beauty about this program and about recovery from my experience has been that it happens at the pace I need it to happen at. And for some people, that's racing along on nitrous, and other people, it's a slow burn, and I was the latter because I wasn't well enough to handle the reality of sobriety. It took quite a long time. And when I was about 12 years sober, I got horribly dumped and had a nervous breakdown. And because all of the negativity suddenly got made true. And that moment where I guess I got caught out, that knocked me over. And so I ended up going into some therapy, and after the... And that worked, that worked really well. And that therapy was essentially with someone who understood alcoholism and AA. And it was a bit like a really in-depth 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, because I was able to deal with stuff that was acting on my subconscious that I wasn't aware of to tell a sponsor, but this person was skilled enough to get it out of me and treat it. And with that experience, I stopped being angry with myself and everybody else. I stopped having that constant sense of, anger, this undercurrent anger. I didn't know I had it until it was gone. And I started to actually be comfortable with myself. And that wasn't that's not like I feel good about myself. It was more about I'm just comfortable being me. And I've never felt like that. And that's been a major blessing, I have to say. And one of the things I had to do early on was I had to divorce God from religion because it was, I was brought up Anglican, not particularly seriously, and, let's be realistic, Anglicans don't sort of beat you up too much when it comes to doing things. And there were a whole lot of Dan Brown had his books and movies out, and my original conceptions were challenged, even though I wasn't particularly religious, and I knew that I needed a higher power to deal with my sobriety, because the line that terrified me the most in the Big Book was, there will come a point for every alcoholic when they will have no defence against that first drink. And they, and I knew that was true, and it scared the bejesus out of me. And so I was really dependent on this relationship with a higher power. And as I said, I'm not a religious person. But when I, and I, funnily enough, I ended up talking to God about it, and the answer for me was there are many ways to get there. Religion is just one of them. It doesn't matter how you get there, just that you get there. And from there, my relationship with a higher power, which I do call God because I haven't got a better word, exploded, and I could find God, see God everywhere. And I was at a function on Thursday night, and I was feeling okay. You know, I was feeling good about it. I wasn't grandiose and I wasn't inadequate. I was just okay with being me. And there's nothing wrong about it, nothing special about the function. And I was talking away to people, but there was my disease tapping on the table saying, you could do this, you could do that. All of these hedonistic concepts, and I realised with absolute certainty that I had no defence to any of that but for my relationship with that higher power. Because if I had been drinking, you could do this would have gone to let's do that. And that would have ended up really badly. You know, it wouldn't have ended up well, because it never did. And that's the thing, I play it forward now. I realise, I remember more like a muscle memory, the experience of feeling bloody awful because I gave into that. I gave into those temptations, and I only ever did it when I was drinking. I'm real glad to be sober. I've got a life now, that I could not, wouldn't trade, definitely don't want what I had when I got here. I'm very pleased to have what I do now. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeremy. All right, you're listening to Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous, meeting on air, live in the studio. Now, if you're listening for the first time or you're fairly new to AA and you want some more information, there's a great place to go. AA.org.nz is the New Zealand website for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's got some details on there. It's Get Help Now is a big theme, or I Need Help. Free call 0800 number is there as well, 0800 229 6757, which for those of us that remember, type in words to help you remember, 0800 AA Works, if you know how to do that. And there's also an email address as well, help@aa.org.nz. So lots of different methods to get in touch with Alcoholics Anonymous. All right, let's move on to some more sharing now. So, Colin, would you like to share?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. My name's Colin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Colin.
It's good to be here. It's good to be sober today. My first time on the radio, so I'm a radio virgin. But, all I can do is just share what happened, what I was like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today. Growing up, you know, I was... lived in a dry house, you know. Both my parents are both sober, and I was always sort of surrounded by AA, you know, going on the camps and, you know, having people around the house all the time, and no one was drinking, you know. And I remember we were at a camp one time, and me and all the other little alky kids were, just playing around and stuff, and we ended up playing, getting a few jugs of water and playing a drinking game at an AA camp, you know. And it's not like anyone taught us to do this, you know. We just, got some cards and started sculling water back, you know. And so much so that one of the girls actually threw up all over the table. And, looking back on that, you know, there's probably a few signs there of what was to come, you know. And but I do remember those camps and stuff being a real highlight of my childhood, you know. And I thank God today that I grew up in that environment, you know. Moving on a bit, you know, stopped going to the camps as I got older because I was too cool, you know. I was too busy hanging out with mates and stuff and causing a ruckus and that, you know. And Yeah, I found alcohol probably around maybe 14, 15, you know, and I was quite good at drinking, you know. Like, I could put it away, man, you know. And back when you're that age, it's sort of expected that, you know, kids are going to be kids and stuff, you know, and they're going to do these sort of things, you know. And, it was a real badge of honour for me, you know. You know, Colin can drink, you know what I mean? And, we used to sort of drink at the parks and stuff, you know, and, I don't know, throw fireworks down the slide and break people's letterboxes and stuff and just be, you know, just craziness, you know. And, fast forward a couple of years, you know, I got a girlfriend, you know, and ended up having kids really young, you know. I was a father at 18, you know, and then I was a father again before my 21st, you know. So I had these two kids and I was still a kid myself, you know, and no idea what I was doing, you know. And I felt like I was missing out, you know. All my mates were in town, you know, partying, travelling the world, doing stuff of their life, you know. And I was there learning how to change nappies and make a bottle, you know. And looking back now, I know that I wasn't ready for that, you know. And it's, you know, I wouldn't admit that when I first got here, you know, but through doing some of the work, I know that I use that as an excuse, you know, for some of the behaviours, you know. Like, we ended up breaking up and then I was alone, you know. I went from having the family to having nothing, you know, and I just drank, you know what I mean, for years, you know. I didn't get into another relationship for about 7 years and I just drank that, you know. I just partied my way through that, you know. I still was, I wanted to be the best dad, you know. I love those kids more than anything, you know. I wanted to walk down the road with them holding hands, you know, and going to get ice cream and stuff, you know. I wanted my kids to look at me and say, this is my dad and this is my hero, you know. And I just couldn't do it, you know. This disease had me, man. And I couldn't see it, you know. I tried so hard, man. And, you know, my daughter, she was about 12 years old, she turned around and said she didn't want to be my daughter anymore, you know. And that's the most painful thing anyone said to me in my life, you know. And I remember thinking it's the booze, you know. And a few days later, I got, you know, as we do, I needed to get out of that pain, you know. And the only way I knew was to numb it, you know. And I remember I got some bourbon. I like the cheap bourbons, you know. I like the cheap and nasties, you know, high percentage, easy to put away. And I remember opening the first can, having a sip, and just starting to cry, you know. And it's the first time I cried in a long time. And by the time I'd finished that can, I was okay, you know. I was back, you know, for the night, you know. And towards the end of it, that was towards the end, but it was, I was drunk, but I could still feel the pain, you know. I was numb, but I could still feel it, you know. And it just didn't work. It just turned on me, man. You know, it was the only thing that was working, and it just turned on me. Like, I had a few relationships in the last sort of, you know, the last part of my drinking, and I just destroyed people, you know. You know, I'd come into your life, take from you, and then leave, you know. And the only people that were standing by me were the people that loved me, you know. And they're the people that stand in the storm and just get ripped to shreds, you know. And Yeah. So I'm, yeah, I better start sobering up here. I've been, you know, I'm coming up on 3 years, you know, and it's the best thing I've ever done for myself. You know, I had that moment as well of, I can't live like this anymore. You know, it was another night of just, it wasn't close to my worst night ever, you know. I've come out of blackouts to beating people up in front of my children, you know. That's the kind of guy I am, you know. And like my daughter came out of a blackout to her, like a blood-curdling scream for me to stop hitting my mate, you know. And yeah, jumping in the car, driving off with them drunk, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, just, and sort of not seeing anything wrong with that, you know. And yeah, I got, that wasn't enough, you know. The love of my children wasn't enough. The love of my parents wasn't enough. There's nothing, you know. I was going to drink till I died, you know. And yeah, I just had that. I stayed dry for 5 weeks before my last drunk, and just like, you know, the first couple of days I was all right. The next week I get a bit of a stone in my shoe, you know, and something's bugging me, you know. And then, you know, and a couple of weeks after that, there's a knot in my stomach, you know. And then by the end of that 5 weeks, my head's about to explode, you know. I need to get out of this, you know. And yeah, I knew that drink was coming, you know. So I went out, you know, for a couple of beers, as we do, you know. Ended up going to the pub and getting thrown out and throwing up in the heater and trying to fight some guy. Going home, having a fight with my partner, police getting called again, you know. It's just the same thing, the same story over and over, you know. And the next morning I drove to see my mum, and I just saw myself in the mirror, and there was just a shell looking back, you know. There was nothing behind my eyes, you know. And that was the moment, you know. That was my God moment, eh? And yeah, I went inside and she said, I was just waiting for her to say, you know, do you need help? You know, I wasn't going to ask for help, you know, but she said, do you think you need some help? And they've been trying to sort of push me towards it, but I said, yeah, please help me, you know. Went to a meeting that night, and it was a Maruma Sunday night meeting. Yeah, small meeting, you know. I was scared, you know. I was full of fear. It was dark. I can't remember what anyone said. I remember crying for about 5 seconds in my chair, and I got up to run out the door, you know, and a couple of the men stopped, you know, and they just made me feel like I was going to be all right, you know. They made it, you know, it's possible for me as well. And, yeah, I have been sober ever since, you know, and it hasn't always been easy, you know. Like, I have struggles and, you know, I have pain. But I'm living the best life I could have dreamed of, you know. Like, I've taken my rightful place back in my family, you know. I have a beautiful partner, you know. Got some amazing people in my life that I love very much, you know, and they love me too. And I can say that and mean it today, you know. I help people today, you know. Like, I need to help the next guy that walks in that door, you know. I need to stop him from walking out the door without a little bit of hope, you know. And yeah, I have this God in my life that's always there for me, you know, and I know that now. I have an amazing sponsor who's just celebrating his birthday today, which is awesome. But yeah, if there's anyone out there that's struggling, you know, it's possible for you too, you know. If someone like me can get sober, then I think anyone can, eh, you know. And I've seen miracles in here, you know. But just don't leave before the miracle happens, you know, because a lot of people, you know, they look for the differences, eh, but you know, we're people that wouldn't mix in the outside world, and here we are. You know, we all work together and we all help each other. Eh? Yeah, and it's my job to carry this message. You know, so yeah, thanks for inviting us today, and yeah, I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Colin. All right, this is Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous Meeting on Air, live, and this is a Sunday Spiritual Concepts meeting in Wellington, in the studio. Now, just mentioning about help, now on the AA website there's some details about how to get help. There's an email address, help@aa.org.nz, so that's very useful if you want to fire off an email. And if you want to talk to someone who is a sober alcoholic who can give some advice and maybe steer you in the direction of some meetings, there's a free phone number, 0800 229 6757. And they can, they're just available to talk to 24 hours a day. Now, on the AA website, aa.org.nz, there is a section called Find a Meeting, where you select your city and select the time of day that you'd like to attend the meeting. So there's live meetings in actual buildings with real people, and there's also meetings on Zoom, electronic meetings that you can attend anywhere in the country at lots of different times as well. So that's Find a Meeting section on the aa.org.nz website. All right, let's carry on with the sharing. So, Chris, would you like to share?
Yeah, I'm Chris and I'm an alcoholic. One of the advantages of going last is other people, if they talk too long, then you don't have to share much. But the disadvantages are when the two people that are rock stars before you, it's a bloody nightmare. So following that, yeah, it's amazing how, as Colin has been shared before, how we might be different in the real world. But in the Matrix, we're all very similar in many ways. And for me, drinking for me wasn't so much about partying or anything like that. It was just literally just to be nicely pissed. All I really ever wanted and needed was just to be nicely pissed. And what I mean by that is to take the edge off, to feel okay, to be part of, because I, all through my life, from a very young age actually, just felt slightly disconnected and not really part of humanity, and it was sort of happening around me. And I know now that that's actually quite a common human condition that many people have. But for me, coming from where I come from, which is Island Bay, no, which is Scotland, is there's a lot of long grass for alcoholics in Scotland. And so I started something that 14 is the magic number, it seems. It's not 42. But 14, yep, similar to me, started young, hanging about with mates, getting drunk. And the first time I got drunk, a bunch of us were in the school and we got chased by the cops and one of the guys got arrested and stuff. And it was a bit of a disaster. But yeah, I was like, can't wait to do that again. But I didn't really do it a lot. It was just one of those things that, you know, I didn't have a huge amount of money, but I worked on an off license, so that was a great opportunity to access alcohol. But yeah, when I drank, things all sort of, there was scrapes, things happened, you know, nobody got hurt or anything like that, that I remember. But things were always a bit dodgy. But, you know, fast forward a few years, and I was working offshore on the oil rigs in Scotland for a summer job. And I remember it vividly because there was people getting on the helicopter who were shaking because they were like detoxing from alcohol, because you can't drink on the rigs. You just can't. You can get, you know, they'll just kick you off. And I was kind of looking down my nose at them thinking, ah, you're pathetic. Because I could do without it, right? Fast forward 5 or 6 years after that, and there was no chance in hell I could have done it. And what had changed, really, all the thing that had changed was I had a bit more money in my pocket, and I had a job, and I was living in the Midlands of England, and I was in a relationship in Scotland, and things were just all over the place, and my behaviours were crap, and we were always getting into fights and stuff. But when I was living by myself in England, it was my elixir. I called it my time machine. Because I'd get home at night from work and I'd be like, you know, staring at the walls and then think, I know what I'll do. Gin and tonic. The civilised man's drink. And time would just... And then I'd wake up by the phone going and it was the person coming to pick me up to take me to work, and I was there in my suit and all that and thinking, oh dear. And so drinking by yourself, not a good sign. And also, notably, I was surrounded by pubs. There was pubs everywhere and people to be convivial with, and... Yeah, I didn't really want to do that. I just wanted to be nicely pissed. But unfortunately, I've got an allergy. And what happens with me is, or used to happen with me, is I'd take a drink, or I'd be obsessing about that drink, thinking, oh, I need a drink, I need a drink, I need a drink, I need a drink, I need a drink. And then I'd take a drink, and then I can't stop. And if I only ever had one, for example, if I was driving, or if I was doing something that required, you know, operating machinery, it was awful. I'd hated it, because what's the point? What was the point of having one drink? And it's fun. It's funny now when I go to parties and stuff like that, or I'm at a friend's house and they have a glass of wine and they leave half the glass there, I'm just like, oh dear, amateurs, amateurs, why are you bothering? Because that's, to me, I just don't get it, because what, whilst I say I just wanted to be nicely pissed, actually, my body just wanted to be obliterated. There's a lot of Scottish words for drunk, and they invariably smashed, obliterated, you know, destroyed, and they're about just getting absolutely out of it. And so that's what happens to me if I drink. And then punctuate again, fast forward again. So in my mid-30s now, got two kids. Or then I was in my mid-30s with two kids, and life was just getting out of control. I was driving, you know, going drinking and just all the time, drunk every night, and hiding booze around the house, waking it up thinking about it, going to bed thinking about it. And, you know, the uncommon became common. The thing that I never thought I'd do became the thing that I did as a matter of course. And you begin to hate yourself, and you just think, I can't go on like this, but I don't know what to do. And so and the last thing I had a drink, sorry, it wasn't the last drink I had, but the last time I had a moment of clarity was on the 6th of January, 17 years ago or something like that. And Feast of the Epiphany, trees coming down, partner left the room, came back, and I was really drunk. And she went, how did you get so drunk? And I said, And this is the part I love about AA. There's just these miracles that happen when you've got a miracle of honesty, a moment in time when you actually say what's really happening. And I just said, I've been drunk since Christmas Eve. And she said, you just need to do something about this. No idea what to do. I'd asked doctors in the past, I think I drink too much. And they said, oh, you should stop. Oh, thanks for that, mate. That's helpful. not how, but there's, and you know, you'd ask friends, do you think I drink too much? No, you're fine. Take a drink. There's an actual sketch in Scotland called Chewing the Fat. This woman saying, I'm not drinking. Oh, come on, take a drink. Because it's almost like you're offending people in Scotland when you're not drinking. Anyway, but at the end, I just said, I don't know what to do. And I thought back to a conversation I had in the UK with a really dear friend who I said, I'm really worried about how much I'm drinking, which is quite a big deal for someone to say. And we're walking his dog. Beautiful dog, and he said, oh, and he didn't say, oh, you don't drink much, or he said, oh, you're fine. He said, well, I hope you are able to stop, because I'd hate for something to happen to you, because you're a really dear friend. I was like, oh, shit, you took that a bit too far. I wasn't thinking, but it really stuck with me. And so when that moment happened with my partner, and she said, you need to do something about it, I said, okay. And she gave me a number, and this guy Brett, I phoned them up. And he said, I'll meet you at St. Anne's Church in Newtown at 7:30 on a Wednesday night, I think it is. And I went, okay, that sounds a bit odd, but no problem. And like it's been shared, I walked into the room, and there's meetings on the wall, the banners are there, sorry, slogans. And I thought, oh man, what the hell? And then they shared the story, and people started sharing. I didn't say anything, I don't think. And I swear to God, and I say this at every meeting I go to, but I genuinely thought it was a wind-up and people were sharing their stories to sort of so that I would identify. Because it was all about me, literally. I was being punked by these random people. Because I thought, how can that be? He drank because he felt different. That person drank because of resentments. That person drank because of fears. That person drank, oh, fuck's sake. And then I realised I was an alcoholic. Now, I realised it, but I didn't accept it. I didn't admit it or accept it. I realised, and then thought, oh, yeah, shut up, and didn't really do anything about it. But I identified enough that I went to meetings. I kept going to meetings, and I kept going to meetings. And a dry dock was a frequent one, and another one on a Monday night called Bills and Bears over on Tinney Quarter Road. Great meeting. But I noticed that after about 6 months of this, I was getting really resentful and angry about people who were still able to drink. And it began to get summertime or something like that. And I remember driving to Dry Dock on a Friday night and getting towards the meeting. And rather than going to the meeting, I just went straight on and went to a pub by myself. And it was like I was an automatic pilot. It was like an automaton. It was happening without my bidding. And before I knew it, I had a drink in my hand, and then the night progressed, and that didn't stop me again, and this was happening again and again, until about 10, or it was June the following year, and I finally just had this moment where I'd given up. And so there was a moment of admission, but acceptance. And like has been shared about, there's these moments you step across the Rubicon, and you're not the same person anymore. Because you just realised that way's madness. And so my sponsor and I, we worked through that, and I created this movie for myself, and like a screenplay. What will happen if I have a drink? Well, I know what will happen. Dun, bang, 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 you know, beginning, middle and end, Joseph Campbell's the hero's journey, disaster, you know, all of that shit. And so rewind to the start, better not take a drink then. And so from then on, it's just been about a process of trying to find a way to not take that drink. And the higher power part is something I really struggled with at the start, because I was brought up as a Catholic, and I just rejected all of that when I was growing up. Just thought, there's no way, that's not for me. But this program's not about that. It's not about a religious program. It's a spiritual program. And that's why I love the Sunday morning meeting, because it's a great way to start a Sunday morning. It's pretty early, 8 o'clock, but, you know, it's worth it. And, you know, we talk about the spiritual side, and it's about a relationship with something that is not you. You can call it God, you can call it a higher power, you can have a conception of something that's greater than yourself. And I struggled with that at first, and I sought help about that, and I realised what I was actually trying to achieve. And again, crossed that other Rubicon, and that I didn't worry about it anymore. So when I'm sponsoring guys, we mentioned sponsors before, and for me, the sponsor was really important to help me get through those steps. Because it's a wee bit, when you read the big book, it's like, what the heck? I don't know what that means, because it's written in a kind of Great Gatsby style, 1930s vibe. But tremendous book and really helpful. And when you work with a sponsor, they can guide you through that. And then realizing, it's all, you work in your fears, you work in your resentments. And these days, and I was just sharing this before the meeting with the guys, I don't really have a resentment towards anyone anymore. And if I do, I realise there's something that's disturbing me, annoyingly. And it's me that may be the problem here, or I have to take ownership of things. And that's a beautiful way to live your life. And that's the way I live my life now. I try to. I can be a right arse at times without any question. But in no process of that do I feel like I want to take a drink. And that is an absolute miracle. And I just want to finish on something that I read the other day that just really love, and it's a quote from a guy called Thich Nhat Hanh, and he said, as long as you find something beautiful, good and true to believe in and abide by, you have the equivalent of God in your life. And you know, and that's from someone from a different tradition, and you know, as old as time really. And we suffer from a problem that we are not different from other people, we just have an allergy to something that can really destroy our lives. So as long as I remember that I'm allergic to peanuts, then I really don't want to eat peanuts. And I just can stay away from alcohol, and I keep very close to the people in my life that have been really good to me and helped me. And I just love AA. I think it's the best thing I've ever done, apart from having kids and being in a relationship, of course.
Thanks, Chris. All right, this is Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM. We're almost at the end of Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. So, Chris, you mentioned the big book before, so if you can finish us off with a reading from, what page is it? 55.
Actually, we are fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us.
Great. All right, shall we finish with the serenity prayer? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
courage to.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.